Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark millennial Ben.
I miss nothing, Mark.
Nothing gets by you.
Nothing. It is presented by Brakes Plus. All right, here's I got a couple for you. This one's from Mark in Parker, who says, since we are just talking a little bit of hoops right now, if the Nuggets or Avalanche end up starting up their season again and finish the season winning the world championship, is there an asterisk by it? With everything that has gone on with this crisis? Great question. Great question. If the NBA and NHL start up again and crown a champion in a way that we've never seen before, maybe jumping right into the playoffs and all the teams are sequestered in hotels and playing in one location and in front of empty arenas and playing shortened series and all that, should an asterisk go beside whoever wins?
No. Because everybody has to play under the same, you know, set of standards. So there's no, I mean, everybody has to deal with the same issues. So I don't look at that way at all. You know, it's interesting. During Deflategate, did the Patriots come back to win the Super Bowl that year during the Deflategate year?
That year, well, did it happen that year? Yeah, I think they lost the year before.
My point being is you don't know.
After Deflategate?
Yeah.
Well, after Deflategate was their undefeated. Oh, Deflategate. I'm sorry. There are so many gates with them. Yeah. I was thinking about their
Spygate.
Yes, after Deflategate, yes, they did win the Super Bowl that
year. Okay, but does anybody go, yeah, but that was the Deflategate year?
Well, some do.
No, not really. I mean, you know, like, we can't even figure out what the Deflategate year is. Hey, the first year that we won a world championship here in Denver, we had a salary cap violation and we got docked a certain amount of money and a draft pick, I think, right?
Right.
Does anybody put an asterisk by it? Maybe Kansas City fans.
Or Houston or Oakland fan, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. but who cares? Like, nobody talks about that as being a, you know, like an asterisk Super Bowl. So I don't think so. Now, the Astros, yeah, because there's a level of malfeasance with what they did where, you know, people, like you've said so many times, you know, the true tragedy of the baseball season not starting is we don't get to watch guys get beaned, and
Well, not beaned, but, you know, just dotted. You know, just a good 95-mile-an-hour fastball in the back. You know,
and
what
the
I mean?
Ribs.
Yeah.
I get, you know, and we've been, we're being deprived of that beauty.
Yes,
and,
we are.
Right. And also the heckling that was,
right?
The heckling that would have gone on this whole season. But like that's different than everybody being in the same, like everybody's in the same boat. Like we're all in this thing together and who responds? And I thought it was interesting. One of the things that George Karl just said to us and, you know, is that, hey, depth is going to be more poignant. Like where, during the NBA playoffs, usually you shorten the bench. You play 7-8 players, you know, and all of a sudden, because of managing guys' minutes and managing health and managing, you know, all that stuff, now all of a sudden a team with a bigger bench has got
more of
an opportunity.
Great point. And
the Nuggets, historically, you've talked about it, as their bench being too big, well, if they come back here, maybe that's an advantage for the Nuggets.
Yep, great point. If the NBA and NHL playoffs come back, you're really set up that you're good either way as a fan base. Because if your team wins at all, you're right. You immediately puff your chest out and say, hey, we're the champs. We had to go through what everybody else had to go through. The playing field was even, and we came out on top. Woo-hoo! We apologize for nothing. And if your team falls short of winning a championship, it's easy for you to say, ah, please, this wasn't even a real playoff. This isn't how it's normally done. This thing was weird from the beginning. So the fact that we didn't win it all, who cares?
Right. They wouldn't have beat us in a seven-game series. That three-game series doesn't count.
Right. We would have had home court advantage, whatever. You know, there's all kinds of built-in excuses. So really, you can't go wrong either way.
Right.
So, you know, it's the best scenario you can get.
Yeah.
Either way, you feel good about your team. Hey, either we won it all and we apologize to nobody, or we came up short, but it was in a year that was weird for everybody. So no biggie. On to next year, that type of thing. So it's
what we love.
Not a bad situation.
It's what we love—a built-in excuse.
Exactly.
We love that.
Well, seriously, I mean, I'm not joking.
Yeah, I'm not either.
No, we do like that.
Yeah, America loves a built-in excuse.
I mean, you've been building in excuses for all of your 68 years. This one's going to stick. Benny, you got to get that drop of George. Say, you know, Mark, you and I are probably the same age, right? So,
this is not going to end well.
No, this is going to stick.
This, as long as I do radio in Denver, this will always be there.
Yep. Here's another question for you from Big Rob.
Uh-huh.
Says, Mark, get ready. I am going to convince you that Henry Ruggs is the way to go. In Henry Ruggs' 3 years at Alabama, he had 100 touches and scored 25 times.
Who cares?
That is a 4-to-1 ratio. No other wide receiver in this draft class even comes close to that scoring ratio. So if Denver wants to score more points like they have mentioned, will you agree it doesn't get any better than Ruggs?
No, I will not. I will not agree. How many times does Alabama line up during the course of the season, Mike, with equal talent?
Oh, maybe once.
Yeah.
Against LSU.
Right. And so if you're trying to take away their number one receiver and then you're trying to take away their number two receiver, like you get down in the red zone and you play two stars, right? And you're saying, hey, it's a passing down, and you've got some schlub corner who he wasn't even offered a scholarship at Alabama. They didn't even look at him at Alabama. He's covering Henry Ruggs. I should hope he scored a bunch. I should hope. Come on, man. I don't understand. I don't understand the folks that are like, hey, Alabama and the NFL, they're identical. They're not identical. It's not. The game is different. The level of athleticism is different. Everything about the NFL is different than college football. What makes you think, hey, the guy can run fast? I get it. He is, you know, by all accounts, not my, hey, man, this is not my evaluation. This is the evaluation of a lot of people that I believe in. Yeah, he's an exceptional athlete. Yeah, he is one of those guys that is, what did Chad Brown call him? A player in space.
In satellite.
Satellite player. Get him in space, throw him a bubble screen, do those things. Yeah, I understand all that stuff. I understand how important some of that stuff is. I get that. I get it. I mean, I totally do, but the bottom line is he's not a number two receiver. And if you go back through the scouting reports there, everyone says the same thing. Hey man, how will he react to press coverage? How is he going to get off press coverage? You know, you don't run real fast if he gets stymied along on the line of scrimmage. And then the other thing is not a polished route runner. I mean, not my evaluation, guys. Go through the evaluations of everybody who covers the draft. And the evaluations are all pretty close. Now, it doesn't mean he's not dynamic. It doesn't mean he's not special. But again, I'll point to Tavon Austin. You do not draft a gadget guy in the top 20. Sorry.
And you think he's a gadget guy?
I think that's where he starts. And that's who he is. And maybe he develops into, you know, maybe he develops into a great wide receiver. I don't know. But that's my evaluation. Hey man, if you want to take a receiver at 15 overall, yeah, as a compliment to Courtland Sutton, or you want to take one that you think is that is going to be better than Courtland Sutton, you take one of these Higgins kids or a Jefferson kid or a kid that is a polished route runner and a guy who's a big time receiver, not a slot guy that's a gadget guy that you throw bubble screens to.
I'm gonna keep echoing what Tyler Palumbis has said, that if you are drafting a receiver that you do not think is going to be better than Courtland Sutton, you don't draft him. Not a 15.
Right.
You don't. And the idea, I keep seeing this when I see mock drafts that have the Broncos taking a receiver like Ruggs, it always comes back down to, well, the Broncos need a compliment to Courtland Sutton. You don't need a compliment. If you're taking a receiver at 15, it's with the idea he's going to be your best player. If you're taking a receiver at 15, it's with the idea he is going to be, in your mind, your best offensive player besides your quarterback. And who out there honestly thinks that you're going to get a player better than Courtland Sutton or even better than Noah Fant? And if you draft a guy with the idea that he's going to be your best player, how are you getting maximum value for him, Courtland Sutton, and Noah Fant? Oh, and Melvin Gordon as well. How are you going to do it? You're not. So by extension, you're automatically diminishing your pick. You're diminishing what Sutton can bring you. You're diminishing your first round pick that was Noah Fant, all of that stuff. But you're right. If you're drafting somebody here you're not convinced is going to be better than Courtland Sutton, then don't do it. Then don't do it. By the way, we got another bonus question, Mark. Someone wants to know, Mark, what was it like growing up as a teenager in the 60s? Oh, this is good. I love this. Because if you were 68, you'd be born in 1952.
It was tremendous. Yeah, the 60s were, going down. It was cool because we'd go down to the soda shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'd have ice cream float. We'd have
right.
a float.
That's
a,
right. That's
a,
right.
What did they have back then? We go down to me, Potsy,
yeah.
and
yeah.
me, Potsy, yeah. Ralph Mouth.
You know,
we head down.
What was jerk?
That?
You know, yeah.
What was that? What was the name of the restaurant they always hung out at?
Oh, they went to oh my goodness, it was Arnold's.
Arnold's. Yeah, hanging out at
was
Arnold's.
It Arnold's. Was it Arnold's?
Yeah, I think it was Arnold's.
No, was it Arnold's? Was it Arnold's?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it was.
All right, hold on.
Arnold's.
First day. First time we need some
Everty music.
Everty music here. Yes, Arnold and hold on a second. Yeah, it was Arnold's. Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So you guys hung out at Arnold's there, the Arnold's of Alaska.
Right.
Back in the 60s.
Yes, back in the 60s. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Keep them coming, people.
Aren't you clever?
All right. Something I wanted to do here, and I totally lost my track because we were having so much fun. I don't know what it is. I totally lost my track. I thought in the 60s you guys got your buddies together and you go burn down the administration building.
No, we weren't the radical 60s.
You weren't the radical 60s?
No, we were up in Alaska at the time.
You were more like the doo-wop 60s, right?
Yeah, yeah. The doo-wop. We were the doo-runs.
Slick your hair back,
yes.
All that kind of stuff.
Man, around a man, my heart stood still. The doo-runs, run. Yeah, that was us.
There you go. And you were clearly the Fonz of your group, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no.
Me. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it was fun growing up in the 60s.
That is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
On the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. By the way, those were the 50s, actually.
The
Fonz. Those were
right.
back in the days of the 50s. But, 50s, 60s.
Close enough. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Hey, when you're my age, it all runs together, right?
Right, you know, when you're 68, man.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows?
The decades just are a blur.
Mm-hmm.
So, we were talking about, maximizing your value and getting the most out of the position if you're going to draft a wide receiver. I love what Charles Davis posted yesterday at NFL.com. So we love Charles Davis. We've had him on before. You respect him very much
for
amount of time that he puts into really researching all this stuff. So he has only 27 players in this draft with first round grades. Okay, there'll be 32 taken in the first round. Mm-hmm. He's got 27 who he believes belong in the first round. And all the usual suspects are there. But one name that jumped out at me was Laviska Shenault.
Right.
Who he has ranked 21st out of his 27 players with first round grades. And he went on to say about Shenault, one of my huge crushes in this draft. He's exactly what a creative play caller is asking his GM for. Can make big plays from the perimeter, slot, as a runner, heck, even as a Wildcat QB. He's likely ranked higher here than he is on most boards. I'm happy to elevate him. My dream scenario for this draft is they go tackle D lineman or linebacker at 15, and then get Laviska Shenault in the second.
Here's the beauty, and you know, it's bad for Laviska Shenault to have the injury issue, the core injury issue, but it's good for some enterprising, smart franchise, because that dude's a football player. And, you know, he ran a 4.5 something with that injury, which 4.5 is, there's plenty of speed there, right? And you did it hurt. It, like, to me, that downgrades him in the draft, and somebody's going to get a great football player for, you know, a very reasonable rate. So I'm 100% with you. I'm glad Charles did it. There are a lot of people, you know, there are a lot of people that look at him and think, oh, football. And this is the crazy thing about, you know, draft and about, you know, how good you are at exercising and all this stuff is that you look at a great football players. Great football players help you win. They help you win championships. And you're going to get a great football player who gets downgraded simply because he ran hurt. And I would look at that like from a different perspective. I would look at that like, hey, there's a lot of guys that would have just said, hey, I'm going to wait for my pro day. Because remember, at the time, we weren't on quarantine. This is a new world we were in. And he could have just said, hey, man, my core injury has not healed yet all the way. I'm waiting for my pro day so I can really run a good time. And we went in there and competed. And that actually, to me, that adds value.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it's funny. The Becton kid, you know, the big tackle that's 370 pounds and, you know, 6'7".
Yep.
One of the criticisms I got from a coach in the league was as soon as he ran a really good 40, he shut it down. He didn't participate in the rest of the combine. It's like on the next drill, he said his hammy hurt a little bit and he shut it on down. He was so happy with his run, and this coach said to me, I'd like to go to his campus and work him out, and I'd try to make him puke to see if he quit. Like, see, these are things that coaches think about. And so to me, yeah, absolutely. Laviska Shenault, he's a football player, man. You can't have enough good football players.
But you understand, though, that the majority of NFL evaluators out there would dock Shenault for trying to compete injured and then putting up those times. So some, the smart ones, would look at it the way you did, say, I can look past all that, and what jumps out at me is that this kid's ready to compete even though he's not 100%. But you understand, though, that doing what he did ultimately probably hurt him in the eyes of the majority of the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
If he's healthy.
Right.
And he goes out and has a really good combine, you know who he is? He is now your Justin Jefferson. Jefferson is, forget about getting him in the second round now.
Mm-hmm.
He has elevated himself to where some people believe, you know, he should be in the big three, and he should bump, you know, a guy like Ruggs.
Right.
And it should be Jefferson ahead of Ruggs, which I completely agree with. But if Chenault had been healthy and had a great combine, he's probably an easy first rounder.
Oh, yeah.
Easy first rounder. Absolutely. So he did get hurt doing what he did.
Yeah, and there's no question. But what I'm saying is that the smart people,
right,
if the injury is fixable and it's not anything to worry about, like, oh, yeah, guys come back from this 100% all the time, then the smart people are looking at it like, well, this is a guy that can play X, Z, or F. He can be in the slot. Like, he could play every position. So here's a guy that can be a gadget guy that can still get you on the outside and be a polished route runner that has the ability to do everything. And so that guy is a very valuable asset, because not only can he do everything, Mike, but now I dictate to you. So when I get into an offensive personnel group, now you have to decide how you're going to play me as a defense. You're going to have to say, okay, Chenault's in. Is he, you know, one, what position is he playing? Two, like, how are we going to deal with him? Three, you know, do we want to roll this into base? Do we want to roll this into nickel? Do we want to roll this into dime? Like, you have to make decisions based on personnel groups. There's certain personnel groups, and this is why the offense under Wrinkles, and this is why the offense that Kyle Shanahan runs is so difficult to defend. And that's why initially Vic Fangio said, I want this offense, because I've had a tough time defending it in the past, because you have to make decisions. When you've got, like in San Francisco now, they've got the beauty of personnel. But when you have a tight end like Kittle, when you have a fullback like Juszczyk, Juszczyk can line up and play slot receiver, or he can play outside the numbers. He can play the Z. Like, he's got that kind of skill set, and he can still be a lead blocker. And the same thing with, you know, a guy like Kittle. And when you have that versatility of position, and you can throw out that personnel grouping or a bunch of personnel groupings, you make a defense have to decide, this is what we're going to do. And that's, you know, advantage goes to the offense in that. And so players like Laviska Shenault can really do things like that for you.
On the RamosLive.com text line from Luke, hey, it's no wonder Stink can impersonate Jerry Jones so well. They're the same age.
I've been thinking about it a lot in the shower.
No wonder. You guys are contemporaries.
Yeah. Grew up in the same time.
Same
there.
Time.
I was playing in Idaho when they were playing. It was me and Wayne Walker and Jerry Kramer.
Yeah, that's right.
We were all playing at Idaho.
Arkansas and the
when he and Jimmy Johnson were in Arkansas and some epic battles.
Epic battles,
Mike.
Old school football.
Yeah.
Leather helmet days.
That's right.
Single face mask.
That's right. That is face mask. What are you talking about, face mask?
What do you mean, face mask?
Face mask? I didn't have no freaking face mask. What do I need a face mask for?
Oh, thank you, George Carl.
I'm gonna have to text George right now and go, yeah. Hey, thanks,
appreciate it. Millennial Ben is feverishly working. We got him on for a while. He's like, I can't find the clip. I go, don't worry, it's there. I heard it, so it's there.
Please erase it, Millennial Ben.
Nope, find it.
Millennial Ben, there could be a bonus in there for you.
Oh, now he's trying to bribe
there
my man.
There could be a bonus in there for you, Millennial Ben.
Well, he's a millennial. He'll probably take it. All right, coming up next, another voice weighs in as to why the Broncos should not take Henry Ruggs. You'll hear that influential voice next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.
Mark, you and I are about the same age.
Huh? Mike? Mike?
So that's George Carl, who was...
George, you and I are about the same age.
So, George, who's 68, thinks you guys are the same age. Huh. Which led to this text from a listener. Stink, you were born before Alaska became a state. What'd you guys call it back then?
That was a territory.
That's right.
It was a territory.
I grew up, I was born in 52.
You would call it the last frontier.
That's right.
We call it the last frontier, whippersnapper.
That's right.
What's it tell you?
Growing up on the territory.
Yeah.
Didn't become a state till 1959. Back then, we were tough.
That's right.
Just a territory.
Just a territory.
Bart, you and I are about the same age.
We had our own list of rules back in the territory.
That's right. That's right. There were no rules.
There were no rules. The rules were there were no rules.
There were no rules.
Did a lot of hunting and trapping back in the day. Made myself a coat out of wolf skin.
Oh, God bless George Carl. Mm-hmm. Thank you. What a treat. What a treat.
I know.
Christmas
I know.
Come that's, early. That's
yeah.
That's the fun with
good
that
for,
one.
Hey, good for you, Mike.
Good for
that is good
for me.
You.
I don't know if it's good for everybody else, but it's good for me. And
it
that's,
is good for you.
That's all I really, really care about. Chad Brown on yesterday, staying in with the drive with D-Mac, had this to say about all you Henry Ruggs fans out there.
He's not a polished route runner. I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of the plays to him in the Alabama offense were a lot of the bubble screens and things like that. Now, at some point, he ran every route on the tree, but again, he's not a polished guy, and they were not counting on him to be that true number one receiver type of guy who, you know, goes out there and beats people with craftiness and route running. He was, you know, to Todd McShay's credit, part of that all satellite team. Get him the ball with some space around him, and let's just watch him go. And in some ways, I've been starting to think about him and kind of comparing him to Percy Harvin.
Mm, well, that's pretty good.
Percy Harvin was a 22nd pick in the draft. Definitely not a true receiver coming out of college. Kind of a jack of all trades. Played some special teams, ran with the ball, and caught the ball. And when he was in Minnesota, he actually put together some pretty good seasons. Never had a 1,000-yard receiving season. And never had more than 350 yards as a rusher. And had some impact in the kick return game. But that's how I see Ruggs fitting in. Never truly going to be a reliable number two receiver. He's always going to be a guy who is going to need other receivers around him who are the true route runners to set him up to get him the ball in space.
So he would be a good complement then to Courtland Sutton.
Yeah, I think you still need a true number two. I don't think...
you don't think he's even a number two then?
No, no.
Oh, you just... So you got him as a... You got him as a slot sort of dude.
Yeah, slot dude, gadget dude, kind of how they use Deebo Samuels with the 49ers.
All right, there's Chad Brown. Chad Brown played, Percy Harvin played 8 years in the NFL. In those 8 years, he had a grand total of 353 catches for 4,000 yards and 22 touchdowns. Now, I know he could do more. He also had what? During the course of his career, had he only had 5 rushing touchdowns.
Mm.
So, sorry. You could do a lot better.
Right.
In one of the most loaded wide receiver classes ever.
Right.
Than getting another Percy Harvin at 15.
Okay, so let me just tell you. I did a Florida game. I called the Florida game when I was at ESPN. It was Florida-Kentucky. And Randall Cobb was on Kentucky's team, and Percy Harvin was on Florida's team. And so just kind of so you know, like the premise of college football, right? They ran essentially Percy Harvin's was, he was a gadget guy, right? He'd go in motion and he would do, you know, they would run him on a counter play, and then they would go in motion. And one of the things they did consistently is they get 4 verticals, right? They just send 4 receivers down the football field, and they'd motion him across formation, and they would get him matched up on an option route inside on a linebacker and just dump him the ball. and he would just, I mean, he would literally just tear people apart. I mean, just tear them apart. Because athletically, he was getting matched up on linebackers constantly in the middle of the football field as they were running verticals. Like, that's what they did. Like, that's how I see Ruggs. I think it's a very fair comparison. And yeah, you're going to have a lot of success in the college game. Yeah, you're going to make a lot of plays in the college game. And yeah, some of that stuff will translate. If you've got enough offensive weapons around a guy, some of that stuff will translate in the professional game. But come on, eight years and what'd you say? Like, just over 300 receptions?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What did Michael Thomas get last year? 140 receptions?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Chad is a very, like, he's very intelligent, played for a long time, has done a bunch of internships. Like, I trust his evaluation. And I see it very much the same way. And so, again, that is not a 15th overall pick. I know that he's I understand the dynamic nature of athleticism, but I think a lot of you get duped into, a lot of fans get duped into, well, this guy is the best athlete, so certainly he's going to be a huge impact player. And I get it, right? We have to face Tyreek Hill all the time. But would Tyreek Hill be Tyreek Hill if they didn't have Sammy Watkins and Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes and Robinson and Hardman and if they didn't have all the weapons they had and five offensive linemen that can go 5-0 protection at all times, like, would he truly be as impactful?
Well, one of the weakest arguments made for Ruggs is that, well, we need a speed guy. Speed guy?
Right.
We need somebody that's different to complement Courtland Sutton. Why? Where is it decreed that you have to have, if you have a 6'4" receiver on one side, why the other guy on the other side has to be, 5'10", 5'11" and run fast? To me, if you're able to give me one of these prototype receivers who are, and I go back to LaVisca Chenault, you go back to a guy who's 6'2", 220 and is a big target, is good with the ball after the catch. And most importantly, something you said a while ago, we were talking about, I don't know how it came up, but we were talking about receivers and it stuck with me, is that there are a lot of receivers that come into this league that think they know how to get off the line of scrimmage. And then there's that moment when you get into the NFL and you come across that veteran corner who smacks you in the chest as you're getting ready to run your route and get off the line of scrimmage. And that crack to the chest literally takes your breath away. That first time you get punched in the chest, your sternum gets cracked like it never happened in college football. And how many guys you've seen over the years who once that happened the first time, they're like, ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And they never become the pro that people thought they'd be. And yeah, with a guy like Ruggs, okay, I hear all that, he's fast and he's a good route runner, but he's 5'11", what, 180, 190? 5'11", 190? That would give me some pause. You give me as many 6'2", 220-pound guys as you can give me, and I'll make it work.
See, it's interesting. Like, that whole thing, I always go back to one of the guys on the All-Decade team, Darrell Revis, who, I mean, he couldn't outrun anybody. Like, I don't know what kind of speed Darrell had, but he just was not outrunning people. But I'm telling you what, when I used to watch him play, Mike, and it was fascinating to watch him, he looked like an elite-level left tackle playing cornerback. He was big, he was strong, he had great feet, and he just would stab people. Single-hand punch, double-hand punch, and he would stymie them on line of scrimmage. And ultimately, like, he's not a guy that's getting a lot of interceptions. I don't know what his career total was. And part of it is because the way the NFL is structured now, where many of your reads are one side to the opposite side. If you stymie a guy for 1.2 seconds on the line of scrimmage before he gets off, he's not on the proper timing for the route. Like, you'll never hit the window. You get delayed in the window, and so the quarterback is automatically off you to the backside. So it just goes one side, oh, he's not open, bam, let me get to the other side. So that was the beauty of Darrell Revis, man. He'd stop you in your tracks before you could even get into your route, and the ball was already thrown to the opposite side. And so he just didn't, like, people just didn't even, people were like, well, we didn't test him. Well, you didn't test him because he stymied the dude on the line of scrimmage. And, you know, and I always go back to that time I'm calling a game in Cincinnati where one of the coaches go, what the coaches said about John Ross, they go, how's that working out? And he goes, oh, my Lord, so-and-so hit him in the chest in the very first, like, I mean, just stymied him on the line of scrimmage. He was hurt for 3 days. Like, he was out with hurt feelings in the ice tub. I'm telling you, it's
real.
And
Ross went, what, eighth overall, I think it was?
Eighth overall, yeah.
One more on the RonaldSlot.com text line. Mark, is it true at your age you've accidentally told your landscapers to get off your lawn?
Mark, you and I are about the same age.
Oh, God.
I love our listeners.
Oh, man.
God, I love our listeners. That was George Carlin earlier with us today. Speaking of which.
None of what he said is important other than my age.
Other
right.
than that. Coming up, though, I don't know how to quite put it, I guess. Is it encouraging? Is it depressing, sobering NBA update from the Woj? A Woj bomb coming up next. Tell you what, in a time where supposedly not much is happening, we've got a jam-packed show.
Uh-huh.
A lot of great sound. We've heard from DeMarcus Ware, Chad Brown, George Carl. The highlight was him saying you guys are the same age.
Mark, you and I are about the same age.
But,
yeah, he didn't take the end part. No, I mean, I'm older, he said. He did say that, well, didn't he, Ben?
Yeah, but he implied you guys were the
same age. How about new?
Yeah, you know, Ben.
And besides, that part of
no
the clip.
No bonus for you,
that
Ben.
Part of the clip has been lost into the ether. But we also heard from Adrian Wojnarowski, who was on early this morning before we started, was on with Golic and Wingo, and, you know, I get a sense that there is some sense of light at the end of the tunnel, not only with the governor coming out yesterday and saying that, hey, now it's April 26th, the date has kind of been moved up a little bit as to when we can stop the sheltering in place. Of course, it means everyone needs to continue to do what they've been doing for the next few weeks, stay the course, but there's some light at the end of the tunnel. Major League Baseball is talking about a possible May startup. In which everybody would be playing in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area, but it would be weird to be different, but at least it'd be baseball.
Right.
And the idea that maybe the NBA, and then maybe followed by the NHL, could be following suit. Here's what Adrian Wojnarowski had to say about a possible NBA startup.
It just reminds you that everything is changing so fast, and I think, you know, Adam Silver said it, where they were, you know, 3+ weeks ago to where they are now, is so dramatically different in this country and with the pandemic and how fast it's moving that they know that'll be the case in several weeks. But what I don't think it changes is the fact that they're grinding away at trying to figure out a way to do this. And, you know, they know that ultimately testing is going to be a huge part of any return and rapid response testing. There's a story by Baxter Holmes on ESPN.com from last night that explains, you know, a good deal of that. But there's no question the league understands that it's going to be an uphill battle to get back. But I still feel some pockets of optimism around the league that they could find a way to return and do it in a bubble environment, but no one really knows what the country is going to look like in a month when they really have to start getting down, you know, to having a timeline that makes it realistic to play basketball again this season.
I think the biggest takeaway from all that, Mark, is whether it's the NBA or the NHL, it's a column I wrote about last week that if you're going to have basketball and baseball, understand It is going to be unlike anything we've ever, ever seen. It will involve teams, if, and I'm going to use the NBA playoffs as an example. It will involve, let's say, all eight Western Conference playoff teams, all sequestered in one area, playing all their games in one area, basically neutral court type stuff, no fans.
Correct.
And it would be the same, maybe for the Eastern Conference teams, they'd all be in one area. NHL playoffs would be the same way. All done with no fans. And, but it'd be on TV.
Right.
And I think for a lot of people right now, it's like, yes, I'll take it. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder how long the novelty of it would last.
Well, I mean, you're still playing for something. Like, in regards to the NBA and the NHL, the novelty would last throughout the playoffs because you're still playing for a championship. So, I mean, there's still something, there's still high stakes involved. So I don't think that would be anything that people would say, oh, after one series, everybody's like, well, I'm over this. There's no fans there. I think everybody would be engaged and pretty much locked into that. I think baseball is a different story because, you know, if you're, depending upon how long you play without fans in the stands and, you know, and just the nature of baseball, you know, kind of the monotony, if you will, of baseball in general. I think that would definitely, you know, you'd have to set, hey, we're going to play X number of games at Phoenix for a month and then we're going to go to our home stadiums and, you know, and we're going to play without fans there. And then we're going to allow 20,000 people in. We're going to separate them based on sections and everybody's got to wear a face mask. And so there'll be these stages, if you will, until you get back to, you know, full participation, whenever that is. I don't know, Mike. But at least, you know, at least some signs here in Colorado and I'm sure in the rest of the nation are pointing in the right direction. Where that curve is kind of flattening out a little bit.
But we got a ways to go.
Yeah, we still have a long ways to go. Yeah.
Yep. One more here. This is from Colin in Windsor. Well said. This whole notion about you got to get a speed guy, right? Got to get a speed guy for a receiver.
Right.
Evans, you got it all wrong. You can't have two big receivers and have a successful offense. I mean, look at that Rod Smith along with that speedy little Ed McCaffrey.
Right.
Or that monster Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, and that all-world burner Brandon Stokely. Decker would be nothing without Stoke taking the top. Oh, I'm sorry. I just couldn't finish it.
Yes.
It's true. It's like, stop with the charade. All right, last one.
I just have a feeling I know where this is going.
Guys, I feel bad for Mark's wife. She probably has to check for handkerchiefs and butterscotch candies in his pants pockets before washing them.
Mark, you and I are about the same age.
This is a wreck.
What is it with old people and butterscotch candies?
I know. What is it? My grandmother always had a butterscotch candy
right.
ready to go.
I would always, like, you have a taste of butterscotch, and you'd spit, you never got through. Has anybody ever gotten through a whole butterscotch candy?
No.
If you're not over, you got to be over, like, 65. And then all of a sudden, your taste buds change, and all of a sudden, it's like when you're a kid, you could not stand blue cheese dressing. And as you get to be an adult, you're like, hey, man, this is actually kind of good, right? There's a certain age where you hit, and the butterscotch candy just is like the great elixir.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It's you're right. I don't know if I've ever finished one.
No.
Because
you taste
every time,
it, you're like, yep, I still don't like butterscotch candy.
Nope,
you spit it out.
I don't care how old I get. You know, I might get to be your age someday, 68.
and you and I are about the same age.
And I'm going to be like, I'm going to have a butterscotch candy. I'm going to think of my grandmother. I'm going to think of one of my aunts, you know? I mean, they always had them.
Right, you're gonna get to my age, and all of a sudden you're like, "Well, there's butterscotch candy. Those are delicious. I
struggling
love butterscotch."
Thank you, George Carl. That's right.
I wonder if he did it on purpose.
No. Well, maybe. He's a bit of a wedge driver. He was always a bit of a wedge driver back in the day as a coach. Sure.
I love George.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy. I will be texting him later on this afternoon.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Stern talking to.
Yeah.
Bart, you and I are about the same age.
All right. We're done. We're going to turn it over to the much younger Sandy Clough and Orlando Franklin coming up next.
I tell you what, one of the best shows in Denver, Colorado, coming up right now. Next, it's Sandy and the Big O. Take it easy on that cigar, Big O.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.